skill, and then how you go about making your devices and products and materials, and that is what this nanotechnology is all about. So basically, a bottom-up approach or a top-down approach.
Yeah. So you have these very, very small particles or building blocks, right, that in size scale, like, as you say, are as a basketball would be to the size of the Earth. And then you have to manage to make things out of them, or you can use those to make things out of them. These are very stable little blocks. And what do they look like?
So say, like the, some of the discussions that we had earlier had about like buckyballs. So buckyballs are like carbon fullerenes. I mean, it's named after fullerene, after the guy, Buckminster Fullerene Fuller, and fullerene was named. And in 1985, about Rick Smalley at Rice University and several others discovered these. And so these are stable C60 carbon made out of graphite. The way they are structured is they are hollow spheres. And then those are called the buckyballs. And then there are the carbon nanotubes, which are more cylindrical in nature, and then they are planar in nature. So each one of them have a different application. And so you can go about building them or using them. Say in case of a carbon nanotube, you could basically work with them to use it with antibodies or other cellular structure enzymatics, so that for detection or diagnostic purposes. Or you could use it. You use the nanoparticles as such, as a cargo or as a delivery mechanism, as a transport mechanism. So if you're talking about delivery within, for animal health or for human health, so those could be used as a transport mechanism for, say, on-demand drug delivery or on-demand drug delivery or just-in-time drug delivery.
Yes. So you can build, I guess, little walled entities out of this that actually will follow a set of instructions of sorts. Is that right?
Right. So there is the general understanding is that there's a chemical stimulus and then there's a mechanical stimulus. And so all of these can be brought together, brought to bear to sit there. And what we sometimes, you may have heard the term, honey, I shrunk the doctor, so to speak, that it would go and sit next to a disease cell and release the drug at the time it's needed to, and in the dosage it's needed to, over the period of time. And so it could be used. You can either encapsulate them, or you can you can coat them with these as a transport mechanism.
And so once you've done that, what are the applications? So you talked about some of the medical applications. What other types of applications?
So here we are today talking about agriculture. So as I must remind the listeners that whatever we are talking about today is about 10 or 15 years down the road. So, but there is rapid advancement and development going on, which makes it very interesting, and we could see some light at the end of the tunnel. So one of them is the nanocomposite materials. So nanocomposite materials are being used in other areas, in autos and so on and so forth. So one of the things I envision is being used for tractors and combines, and for making your pedestals or the other areas of the combine more stringent, more rugged, and more durable and abrasion free. So one of the areas that you could also use nanocomposite materials could be potentially in your combine cutter blades, or your moldboard plow or disc shears, and the tines and the like. So there, that those materials then make it more abrasion proof, and so you will have less need for changing them at a regular interval.
So would you see building these things as a sheet over the top of some other composite?
No, you would actually. You could lay it out. There are companies actually doing that. So, in case of like a bumper, so they are coating that bumper with that material, so they basically become abrasion proof. Or you can make those during your manufacturing process. Now, when you're making all of this stuff, of course, you have to put in some of these manufacturing techniques have to be developed to do it on a large scale. And that's why there's a center here on campus, which is the Center for Nano Manufacturing, funded by the NSF. And that center actually is engaged in making these tips and inject spraying techniques and other techniques needed for making a large scale manufacturing and of processes or materials.
So the materials, as I understand them, and I would suspect, for instance, that the use of delivering small amounts of drugs directly into an antibody or into the body of some sort might start with animal science as opposed to human science, right, to see whether it would really work. And usually it's adopted there. So that's one category where you would build a transport of sort and encapsulate. Right. But these are really tiny that would be injected into the bloodstream quite
right,
likely, and they'd
right,
know at that point where to go.
Right. I mean, so you would. I mean, so they would interact with your body, and would stay there enzymatically, and then would create these opportunities where the drug release will occur. Now, when we are talking about all of these things, we have to be mindful. I mean, of course, I mean there are. This is uncharted water that you're going into. So basically, there have to be the toxicity studies and safety studies have to be carried out before you actually go about doing that and adapting it. But you could use it in animal model studies, and then they are currently being explored, especially in cancer cells and melanoma and others. And so you could also, the same model, then you could use the nanoparticles for, say, in terms of pesticide and herbicide application. That what it would do is, again, the same model, that it will be there and apply it at the time needed. And so you would avoid the drift, the spray drift, and you would also avoid over-application of a fertilizer or a pesticide or an herbicide.
So you would avoid spray drift because it wouldn't be activated except on the plants that it said
right, and sits right next to the plant or the weed, wherever it is applied to, and so it will stay there. And then at the same time, you would not be applying in over, or you would not have an overdosage of that. And so normally the general tendency is that you do an over application, and so that to make sure that everything is taken care of.
Yeah, so it would deliver maybe a chemical, or might be able to even take apart an important cell, I would assume.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. So I mean, those are potential applications where you could use it. Now you could, there are other areas. I mean, I can conceive of like smart sensors, in terms of when you're talking about you're getting an analysis of the field. So you have, as you spread these sensors, and they would be your data collection tools. And so you would take them and then analyze that data, and you will have a good sampling of your soil, of the health of your crop, and so on and so forth. So what we have to move these things along, what we have done on the campus is there's a good collaboration going on with the College of Agriculture and the College of Engineering, bringing together the expertise, both in terms of coming out with larger agricultural biological challenges and then addressing them with potential applications or the tools available in engineering. And so here, like, we have a project going on with the Soybean Disease Biotechnology Center or the National Soybean Research Lab, and working on soybean rust spores. So that's a project that I am also involved in trying to develop biosensors which will be detecting soybean rust spores in the air. So those same models can be used, potentially can be adapted for your human funguses or your other pathogens such as E. coli or Salmonella and others.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And we'll continue our conversation in just about 2.5 minutes. We're talking this afternoon with Irfan Ahmed. He is with the National Science Foundation-funded Center for Nanoscale Chemical, Electrical, Mechanical, and Manufacturing Systems here on campus. Oh, I've got that wrong. He's with the National Science Center for Nanotechnology and Science here on campus, and a member of ABE, that's the Agricultural and Biological Engineering Department in the College of ACES. We'll continue our conversation with him about nanotechnology in just 2 minutes.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Trophy Time in Champaign, with plaques and promotional products to recognize all occasions from athletic endeavors and musical moments to business achievements. Trophy Time, they're more than just trophies. Additional information available on the web at trophytime.com.
Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like at this hour from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Keezer. In western Illinois, increasing cloudiness, some showers, thunderstorms will arrive. Elsewhere, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 50 in northeastern Indiana to 62 in the far south. Tomorrow, Ed says, in western Illinois, cloudy, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Elsewhere in Illinois, mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms arriving from west to east. In Indiana, increasing cloudiness, some showers, a few thunderstorms possible late in the day. Highs will range tomorrow from 67 in the north to 80. In the southern parts of Indiana, the extended forecast says showers should continue tomorrow night into Wednesday. Then they'll taper off from west to east on Wednesday into Wednesday night. Rainfall through Wednesday night will range from less than a quarter of an inch in some northern locations to more than an inch in some southern locations. Many places in Illinois and Indiana will receive between a quarter and a half an inch of rainfall, says Ed Keezer. Dry weather will return on Thursday, and that's expected to carry on through at least the upcoming weekend. Temperatures will remain warmer than average late this week into the weekend, favorable for maturation, of course, of the harvest. And the model output is in a bit of disagreement for next week, says Ed. At this point, it appears the temps will remain near to above average, and periodic rainfall is possible. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of WILL Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is the Harvest Hour edition. I'm your host, Todd Gleason, in studio with us this afternoon, Irfan Ahmed. He's an expert in nanotechnology here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. We'll continue our conversation about nanotechnology, what it is, and just how it might be used in the agricultural industries. Irfan, when we left you, you were telling us a bit about biosensors and how maybe it could be used to detect rust spores on the wind. There are other technologies that are available, potentially in harnessing some of the corn waste as well.
Right, yeah. So exactly, the colleagues in the College of Agriculture have been working on corn zein. It's a protein in the corn. And so they have shown that it can be utilized for, again, for medical applications like scaffolds and with the for cartilage and tissue regrowth, and with a lot of interest in folks reaching their golden years and with bone injuries and hip injuries and for knee injuries. Those sort of cartilage regrowth techniques can be helpful, and where agriculture can contribute. One of the other areas that myself and colleagues are working on with the College of Applied Health Sciences in this case is using plant extracts for killing cancer cells. So again, using this biosensor developed by colleagues at the Micro Nanotechnology Laboratory, and then taking these plant extracts, herbal libraries from the Indian Pakistan subcontinent, and using them for study of different diseases, in this case cancer cell, and see which one of the plant extracts actually kills the cancer cells, and some of them actually expedite the process, and then can also be potentially used for other infectious diseases.
I seem to recall on the cancer front that early on in the technology, as I was having conversations with people here on campus, some of them students, some of them not, discussions about building small machines out of nanotechnology that could literally go in and take apart, for instance, a cancer cell, or any cell for that matter, and then be able to self-destruct itself so that it would be able to go in and find the cancerous cells, take them apart, and eventually say, can't find any more, so take itself apart.
So, yeah, indeed. And we have another project with the National Cancer Institute, and this one is part of the eight projects that the NCI gave out in 2005, and this university, along with Washington University in St. Louis, is partners in that, in trying to develop these the devices and materials to diagnose cancer and then to do the therapy needed to do that. And so some of those the projects are underway, and we are making some progress. We at this campus are providing the nanomaterial, the nanofabrication techniques, and the clinical partnership is being retrieved from the Washington University in St. Louis. And the other project that I mentioned was a USAID-funded project with the University of Karachi, and working on these plant extracts that we are talking about. And so so basically the biosensor, as it's composed of a biological component, such as a cell or enzyme, or an antibody, and with the transducer, and then any changes which are which take place, then are noticed and are identified, and that gives you the identification. So this same model can be then used for some of the food packaging companies are using them for food applications, so that if you, especially the grocery stores and so on and so forth, if there's an expiration coming near, these kind of nanosensors can be embedded within the food package material, and then can tell them that the food is about to go bad and so on and so forth, and so that or the presence of a bacteria and has taken place and so on and so forth. So these will be helpful. So there's quite a discussion about, I mean, this into a multi-billion-dollar industry. The progress has been slow because of, I mean, because when you talk about human health, when you talk about food, I mean, you have to go one step at a time, and you cannot, I mean, expedite it. I mean, if you were to make materials which were to be used on cars or something else, it's a different story. But when you're talking about human consumption or animal consumption, you have to be slow and steady.
Are there any materials that are being manufactured today?
Right. I mean, there's a website which monitors some of the emerging technologies, and they list about 250 to 300 products out there, which are which the manufacturers call them nanotechnology based. That means that either some form and shape or of nanoscale work has taken place either in the development process or in the use of that. And so some of them, we are all familiar with it, is your stain-proof trousers and wrinkle-free shirts and the like. So there are nanotech materials already out there. Then there is your sunglasses, which are abrasion-proof. And similarly, I mentioned about the tiles and the bumpers and the like. And so those sort of things are already out there. The sunscreen, the tennis rackets are made of nanotubes. They are lighter. They are more they're stronger. Similarly, tennis balls have nanoparticles in them, so it gets it more bouncier.
All right. Well, we appreciate you taking the time with us this afternoon. Any final word on nanotubes before I let you go, or Buckyballs, I mean, or technology?